I bet the NFL owners are thrilled about that. But the NFL owners are probably calling up Roger like, dude, that was a sick thing for you to say. I'm super happy that you gave an out for my players to boycott.
He also can't even really take any other position at this point, though, because of the leverage that the players have and the way that things have gone down in the rest of the sports leagues. And that I don't think it's going to happen in the NFL, though, because they can't afford most of the players. Exactly. They're
not
set up.
Like, you know, the NBA has 82 games. Baseball, not this year, but has 162 games.
Well, and just the nature of football, too, and the just the fickleness of your career.
It's a different dynamic for sure.
Entirely, yeah. So I would be surprised. Isn't it also crazy it's only 1 week until the first game?
It doesn't make any sense. Hello, and welcome back to The Locker Room, Spokane's only consistent running sports show.
That's right.
I'm your host, Justin Reed, alongside Andrew Tenney, and we have some awesome news.
Yes, we do.
Not sports related in the slightest, but awesome news for our show and awesome news for an awesome company.
That's right. Yeah. No. Good friend of Spokane Talks and The Locker Room, Scott Cook and Lucky Bird have come on as our very first sponsors. So with that very natural and organic segue.
Big fan of them.
Big fan. Here is their first read. So Lucky Bird, in case you were wondering, which I know you were, is a Spokane-based e-commerce and digital marketing company dedicated to helping local companies scale in the online world of e-commerce and digital marketing. So visit luckybirdbrands.com to have a down-to-earth, no-pressure conversation about digital marketing and your e-commerce strategy today.
If you're not using Lucky Bird, you're not going to be very lucky.
Nice.
Not at all.
Nice.
You need to use them if you want to have a successful and profitable online marketing strategy.
This is our first at-bat, and I can only promise that we're going to get more clever and slick integrating Lucky Bird into our show going forward.
We use Lucky Bird.
We use Lucky Bird. Exactly. I use Lucky Bird. Spokane Talks use Lucky Bird.
It's a name that sticks with you, and it's a name that we will continue to bring up over the next few weeks as they continue to sponsor us because they are awesome.
They are. Great people. Great team.
So
shout out, Scott.
Shout out to Scott at Lucky Bird. So moving on to some sports news. Some baseball talk. Mariners haven't played the last few days, and they won't play for the next couple as well because the awesomely terrible Oakland Athletics, who decided to test positive for COVID, prevent the Mariners from playing. So that's really awesome. I love not being able to watch my sports teams because of other shortfalls of other programs. It's really annoying.
I got nothing.
It's tough because, you know, the Mariners are probably sitting there like, you know, we did everything right, mm-hmm. we were ready for it, and now all of a sudden they just have to sit at home and not play because another team decided to get sick. Not saying that it's their fault that they got sick, but it is. So on the Mariners front, they had three trades happen before the trade deadline. Mariners always wanting to be active in their moves, with Jerry Dipoto being probably the most active GM in baseball. Starting off with probably the lowest move, Taylor Williams, probably the Mariners' bonafide closer. They didn't really have anybody. Local kid, played at Camas High School. He was traded to the Padres for a player to be named later, which happens a lot. We don't know who that is yet, so that one doesn't really matter. The next big one was Taijuan Walker, who this is now the second time he's been traded by the Mariners. First time was to the Arizona Diamondbacks in the Ketel Marte trade, where they got Gene Segura as well as Mitch Haniger. They traded him to the Blue Jays for was a player to be named later. They did name this guy, a 19-year-old Dominican Republic kid who hit 301 with two homers, 29 RBIs, and 47 games in the Gulf Coast League. He is kind of – it's one of those things where you're throwing a dart at a dartboard and you're hoping one sticks. But a 19-year-old Alberto Rodriguez would be a name probably to keep an eye on, just because Dominican baseball players are always good.
Didn't the Padres also make like 13 other trades past weekend?
The Padres were so active. Yeah, they got Clevinger from the Indians. They got – I think they had like seven trades that happened. Padres are definitely in win now mode, but they didn't sell their farm system, so they had, I think, the fourth best farm system before the trade deadline.
Impressive.
But I would assume they're still probably top 10. The big one that happened, though, was a seven-player deal that happened before these other two deals. In the middle of the two deals. They traded starting catcher Austin Nola, lefty bullpen guy Dan Altavilla, and righty bullpen guy Austin Adams, who has been out with a torn ACL since last season, for the number 8 overall prospect in the Padres organization, Taylor Trammell, who's an outfielder, a third base, second base, first base kind of infielder guy by the name of Ty France, a catcher, Luis Torrens, who is going to become the Mariners' everyday first baseman until Tom Murphy gets back, and then a closer who is currently out with Tommy John surgery, Andres Munoz, who his average fastball, not his top fastball, his average fastball was 99.9 miles an hour. His average. Wow. So this is definitely a flamethrower guy. He hit 104 on the gun last year, which I don't even know how that's even possible. But, yeah, he's definitely kind of a
– Watch out, Aroldis.
Stud. Yeah, definitely. Don't want to don't want to get in the way of his fastball. So really overall for the Mariners, a lot of good traits. Taiwan Walker was a guy really expected to be traded. The other one happened, the big seven-player trade. DePoto said, like – they kept calling, like, we want Austin Nola, and DePoto kept saying, no, we don't want to trade him. We don't want to trade him. And all of a sudden, he said he just got blown away by this deal. The Mariners were interested in Trammell coming out of college anyway, so it worked out really well for them. That's kind of all we have for the Mariners since they're not playing. But they're kind of going back to this rebuilding mode. They want to build up their foundation to allow them to make the playoffs maybe in 2022. And I think that's plausible. I still think that can happen.
Knowing very little, I just feel like the Mariners are in a perpetual state of rebuilding, and that's just kind of what you have to tell yourself as a fan to make yourself or justify the fact that they're never relevant. But I was kind of curious, what else is going on in the MLB? Is there anybody worth talking about other than the Dodgers and the Rays?
Not, you know, baseball's at this spot, and we kind of talked about this before the show. There's a ton of teams sitting at about 500, playing 500 balls. So, you know, looking at the power rankings from teams like 8 until 20 are just all 500. And then there's a bunch of top teams, which include the Rays and the Dodgers. And then even the Mariners are probably – they're getting – which is really interesting. The Mariners have won 15 games this year, and they're putting them power rankings as second worst, which is kind of surprising because they have more wins than probably like 7 or 8 teams. I don't care about Mariners power rankings as much as I do about, I don't care about power rankings in general, but it's always kind of an interesting topic. But baseball, I think, is losing a little bit of their flair right now. And I don't know if it's because it's baseball or if it's because people were kind of turned off by that whole discussion of the unwritten rules issue. I don't know. It's tough to follow right now. It's a combination of the Mariners not being very good, and it's a combination of baseball just, I think, struggling to find their footing in terms of becoming – I mean, the NBA is in full tilt right now. The NFL is a week away. I mean, they're in a tough place, I think.
Well, even though it's a 60-game season and significantly shorter than a typical MLB season, they are right about at the midway point of the season. So they're in, by this season standards, the dog days of their season. So I feel like – that's got to be a part of it. Obviously, the NBA, NFL is ramping up, which is insane because a week from today, we have the opener with the Chiefs and the Texans, which is amazing. It doesn't feel real yet. No. Without those preseason games, it feels like...
Well, we talked about this too. It's weird because our schedules and our seasons are kind of dictated by when sports start. So football should have started a month ago almost now with the first preseason game. And so knowing that football starts and it is real next week is kind of throwing everything for a loop.
I'm really hoping and banking on that switch just being flipped when we do see the Texans and Chiefs take the field and it's like, oh my God, we're here.
Yeah,
because there hasn't been just that gradual ramping up of excitement and just real feel that the season's coming.
And some of that too, I think, is the media access is different. But I was surprised Monday morning when I was like, oh, it's September 1st. I was like, interesting, even though my birthday's this month, so keep that in mind.
Gross.
We'll see what happens with baseball, but I think the Mariners are in a good spot. We'll continue to kind of break down what they're doing this season. With the trade deadline passed, it's mainly just seeing how the young guys are going to continue to grow. But speaking of NFL, we do actually have a little bit of breaking news that happened a couple hours ago. Seahawks re-signed Josh Gordon to a one-year deal. He is currently suspended, waiting to be reinstated by the NFL, probably for smoking pot for like the 8th time in his career. But you can actually do that in the NFL now. The NFL is looking the other way. So you can actually do that. So we'll see what happens. But I know Seattle loves Gordon. He came into Seattle. Teammates loved him. He was a good team guy. He's been living in Seattle ever since, working out. I think this was just a matter of time. It seemed like this was going to happen, whether or not Josh Gordon was reinstated.
Well, yeah, that would lead you to believe that Seattle is pretty positive and optimistic about the prospect of him actually being reinstated. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, should he be reinstated, where he falls on the depth chart, because obviously you have Lockett, you have Metcalf as the 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. It sounds like as long as he's healthy, Dorsett's probably going to be that third guy.
Yep.
But then you still had David Moore on the roster. John Ursula has been impressive. They got a lot of people at receiver. Obviously, we've had the tight end conversation before.
And then they just re-signed Paul Richardson
too. But
so.
He can't stay on the field to save his life. I'm not going to put anything in. I'm not going to bet on.
I'm
not buying Richardson stock.
I think he only played 17 games over 2 years with the Redskins.
Well, he had a great year in a contract year, and it was but we're not going to keep you anyway. So go have fun in Washington and watch your career disintegrate.
Five-year, $40 million contract,
which
from
is
the Redskins.
Insane.
So good on Paul Richardson, Colorado State product who looks like a skeleton.
Colorado.
He's skinny. Yeah, you're
Buffalo.
Right. Yep, he was Buffalo, Colorado, which he actually had a great college career. But, yeah, we'll see if Josh Gordon, you know, now he can just, you know, smoke a bowl right in the locker room and you know, nobody would ever bat an eye.
No.
So that's interesting. I'm
pretty sure that's what most of the people in the NFL do anyway, right?
I think so. They just, no one ever talks about it. It's the exact same thing. They just pop dozens of pills to help with the pain, and now they just go smoke a bowl.
Brandon Browner.
Yeah, Brandon Browner was a big, yeah, exactly. But he and Richard Sherman love their Adderall, so.
Josh Gordon barely played with them last year. However, when he did play, especially that Monday night game against San Francisco, he showed up in a huge way. I think each one of his catches were on third down.
I think he had three catches.
Those in slants is just perfect. Right on the hands, just clean.
He's a big bodied wide receiver who knows how to use his body to block out guys. And that one big catch too against, I think it was Carolina, when it was like a 50-yard bomb and is just off, you know, his fingertip catch.
Fully stretched out.
I mean, he has the athletic ability. He's getting a little bit older now at this point in his career, but he's still a veteran. He still has some sneaky quickness on you. And like you said, those slants were, they were so important for that Monday night game that without those, Seahawks aren't getting to that, you know, an inch to winning the NFC.
Well, and you just got to think about opposing defenses too, and all the guys that Seattle has that they have to take into account with Lockett and Metcalf. And hope that Disley stays healthy, but you have Greg Olsen, Disley. We'll see if Parkinson ends up being a red zone target at 6'7".
He's big.
He can't do much blocking, but I'm not exactly sure that's why they drafted him in the first place. And then, yeah, you're bringing Josh Gordon back into the fold, too. So Seattle, on paper, has a lot of weapons.
They do.
On offense. Of course, if we're going to have another one of these long, drawn-out passing games, we're actually going to need some pass protection. Seattle refuses to go up-tempo, even though when they do, it works really well for them. Imagine that when you don't have an offensive line. What do? You pass the ball quickly, get it out of your hands. But reason to be optimistic, cautiously, until we watch the first game, and then their line is getting their brains kicked in, which usually happens.
Which can definitely happen. Yeah, you know, Justin Britt was also in for a visit this weekend.
Twice. He's coming for two now.
He was in a visit. Now he actually had a workout, I think, yesterday, if not Monday. But that would be exciting. I've always been a big Justin Britt fan. I think he's taking control of that offense, and it would be nice to have a little bit of, you know, that they always talk about having the same starters along that offensive line. So that would be, I think, very important. But they do have a couple young guys, including B.J. Finney, who they signed to a two-year $8
million deal.
He's dropped down to the bottom
of the depth chart, that's behind a guy who suspended, and I think Kyle Fuller for the first couple games of the season.
So that is very unfortunate. But I think the Seahawks are, and we'll talk more next week for our actual big NFL preview, but Seahawks, I think, will be a Super Bowl contender because they have the offensive weapons. They have the firepower for the offense. But then their defense will be much improved as well. So so let's switch gears a little bit to a team that is full of question marks, mainly because they're full of a new franchise quarterback, brand new tight end, a new system for this quarterback to run. And that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who you said you had some interesting stuff about them. But we'll get to that in a second. But Gronk was interviewed about his new location, and there's already been reports of him struggling with that Tampa Heat. But this one was really interesting. So he was just asked about Bruce Arians and his relationship, and he's like, about how motivating he is working under Arians, and he says that he gets on him a lot. And so essentially what we're going to take from this is that he loves being verbally abused by his head coaches. I think Gronk likes to be put into his place. I think he likes, you know, Bruce Arians to come up and just be right in his grill and be like, Gronk, you moron, like, what are you doing? And I think that's just Gronk's personality also.
He's not the only one. Tom's like that too. Tom's enjoying the lashing that he's been getting from Arians, and he's not immune or exempt from it, which is another thing that Arians enjoys about Tom, is that he's not expecting any special treatment just because of his career and who he is as a player. It's also interesting to hear on the flip side over in New England, because Belichick's coming out and kind of throwing some shade and some jabs at Tom, saying that Cam is the hardest working player. Nobody works harder than Cam. It's like, wait a minute. Hold on.
Wait. let me just get this clear.
So it sounds like both respective training camps are very pleased with their offseason acquisitions. They're very excited because I guess grass is green on the other side.
Yeah, Tampa, I think, has nicer weather, too, so their grass is just actually greener.
I don't know. That humidity sounds awful.
It is awful.
But, yes, it does breed green grass. You're right.
Exactly. So what other Tampa discussion
okay,
do you
so
have for
this
us
is
here?
Kind of what I'm starting to think a little bit, and I don't think it's exactly a direct parallel, but it got me thinking, okay, because they just signed Leonard Fournette, who just a couple days ago at the beginning of the week was dropped.
Surprisingly, cut.
But also makes sense.
It makes sense. Think it was just not talked about, and all of a sudden it's like they cut him. Like, oh.
And the Jags are trying to pass a lot this year, actually, so it doesn't make sense to have a workhorse back that you need to feed the ball to 20-plus times.
Well, they have the top quarterback in the NFL.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, Gardner Minshew is arguably the best quarterback in the NFL.
Right. So you look at all the weapons on offense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have Chris Godwin. You have Mike Evans. You already had O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, and now you add Gronk to the mix. In the backfield, you got a muddied backfield, too. I forgot until they signed Leonard Fournette that they had already signed LeSean McCoy. But then they have, Ronald Jones, who's supposed to be the starter. Rojo, that apparently is the guy, even though they've brought in, like, three other running backs. And I believe his name is Keyshawn Vaughn, who's gotten a lot of training camp buzz. And they got the Wirfs, the tackle, in the draft to solidify the offensive line. So on paper being, you know, the operative term here, they look very good, just like the 2011 Dream Team Eagles did. You had Michael Vick, same LeSean McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, Brent Celek, DeSean Jackson, and then they made acquisitions on the defensive end like Nnamdi Asomugha, Antonio Rogers Cromartie. It was an offseason filled with hype and buzz and just like, man, this team is stacked. And I think they went 7-9 or 8-8.
They were very good.
They came out. It was kind of like the Browns last year, how it's like that first game against the Titans just got their teeth kicked in. And that happened to the Eagles. I don't remember. I think they played like the Rams in their first game. But
and everyone who was on the Browns hype train last offseason was like, we didn't talk about the Browns. Not at all. And I think it's going to be the same thing because, you know, obviously Brady's on a different scale in terms of leadership and in terms of success than Baker Mayfield or even Michael Vick. But Brady's going to a completely new environment with a new coaching staff, with a new offensive coordinator, with new play calls. I'm not buying into the Bucs hype right now.
It's hard not to. It's a polarizing one, but I actually think because of exactly everything that you just mentioned, I think that's where Gronkowski's role is actually going to be integral for this team, especially early on in the season while they're still getting those reps and still getting used to actually playing with each other on the field. Being that security blanket for Tom, I think, is going to be huge, especially in the early part of the season.
And I think Chris Godwin's going to have a better season than Mike Evans. Because Brady recently hasn't had the arm talent to be able to throw.
I was going to say, have you seen Brady throw 50 yards down the field recently?
He doesn't. he can't. And he has been in love with Julian Edelman for the last few years. Even though Godwin's a little bit different in stature in terms of the size difference between he and Edelman. But I think Godwin is more athletically appealing than Julian Edelman. I also think that Godwin is probably just a better player than Edelman. Now, Edelman has gotten by being a bulldog, by being a guy who can get hurt and continue to play while he's hurt. But I think Godwin is just a better talented player. So I think Godwin will have a better season than Mike Evans. But I think the one thing that I think you have to watch is just seeing Brady get frustrated because he's been in the same system for so long that he knew where his guys were going to be. And if they weren't on that team.
Well, and to that same point, how his teammates receive that frustration because they're not used to it.
It's not the Patriot way anymore.
Right.
And he's trying to probably bring a little bit of that Patriot way just because he's Tom Brady. And we'll see how that rolls with Bruce Arians and the rest of the Buccaneers staff and players.
Also, another guy to look out for this season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is Scotty Miller, getting a lot of hype and praise out of camp as the Wes Welker, as the slot guy, as the go-to.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see, because I think there's too many weapons on that offense to fit everyone on the field at once.
It's true, especially they're going to be playing a lot of two tight end sets too. Yeah. So that's
They have to, because they have. I mean, OJ Howard is
tight end depth is insane.
Yeah, so I think they're going to be. I think they're going to be good. I think their offense will be pretty good. I think their defense will be pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think they'll compete for a playoff spot is essentially, because the NFC South is stacked.
Well, the NFC is always stacked in general. Like I said last week or the week before, it's a revolving door. Every year there's a new team that's breaking through, and it's just loaded. And who knows what Tampa Bay, but Carolina is going to be. Everybody's kind of riding them off, but I could see them having a really fun, explosive offense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Bridgewater just needs to be decent, because that offense can get by with decent quarterback play.
As long as he's got two gloves.
McCaffrey. Yeah, as long as he knows where McCaffrey's at, they'll be fine. So moving on, this was something that really upset both me and Andrew yesterday, that when we first talked about this, Kirk Cousins came out. Actually, this was back in July. I don't even know how this came up yesterday.
It's because that's when the pod aired. Oh, so however, the pod was recorded with Kyle Brandt. It's called 10 Questions.
Yeah.
Check it out on Spotify.
It's actually pretty good. But the podcast came out, and essentially Kirk Cousins was talking about the coronavirus. And he said, he's like, I respect people who want to wear masks. I understand why people are wearing them. The people who need to wear them should wear them. I'm going to wear mine because that's just the right thing to do. But if I die, I die. Essentially, he's not scared to get the coronavirus, because if it does and it kills him, that's life. It's survival of the fittest. And people lost their minds. People are like, I can't believe he said that. Kirk Cousins doesn't care about people. He thinks that everyone should die, and he doesn't want to wear a mask, and he doesn't care about the world's population. And Ryan Clark, former Steeler, came out and said, you ain't tough. And I don't think Kirk Cousins' goal when he was recording this podcast was to come off as a tough, strong, I don't care about the coronavirus, it can't take me down. And yet people took it like that.
That was not his tone.
And that was not his tone at all. And what he said is 100% logical, and is the exact same way I feel about it. Like, I'm not scared to get it for two reasons. First off, people who are our age with no underlying health conditions have nothing to worry about, as long as we take precautions and stay healthy when we get it and, like, do the right things. But I wear my mask when I go out in public. I do things I'm supposed to do that they tell me I should do. But he's right. Like, do you see anything? How did this make you feel when you first heard this?
So after the initial knee-jerk reaction all over Twitter, and the negligent and irresponsible reporting where they're taking, of course, just excerpts of what he said. And
2024,
then, Well, the last, I don't know, 7 years, honestly. Yeah. But and then blowing those out of proportion and not accurately depicting what he was actually saying. There was a ton of that, and of course, all the people on the left on Twitter just absolutely attacked him and dragged him through the mud all day.
This is a real thing, Andrew. Okay, coronavirus is a real thing with real consequences.
It's not a hoax. It's not a myth.
No, it's not a hoax. It's not a myth. Wear your mask. Why don't you have a mask on right now?
Good question, Vinny.
We need masks.
I was actually pleasantly surprised. Well, yeah, pleasantly surprised to see a lot of the media members after that knee-jerk reaction. They came out and supported him and were actually like, no, if you take in full context what he said, this is about as normal and rational of a position that you can have on the virus if you're not one that really subscribes to all the fear mongering that's out there surrounding the virus. And I feel similarly to you and similarly to Kirk. It's like, I don't have a problem going out in public and wearing the masks and everything and abiding by all these safety guidelines and protocols. That's fine. I have no problem with that. However, is it something that stresses me out and that I worry about on a day in, day out basis? Absolutely not.
I don't even think about it. I don't, because some people, I think, wake up and like, oh my God, am I going to get sick today?
The CDC just recently came out and said that 94% of this, north of 180,000 deaths in North America have been
from underlying conditions.
Right. Only 6% of those have solely been attributed to the coronavirus. Yeah. But anyway, so Kirk just had himself a day yesterday.
Yeah.
Poor Kirk. And so, you know, as a consolation, Kirk, for putting up with all that, I drafted you in fantasy. You're welcome.
Did you?
Don't bum me out.
Interesting. Kirk's he's a fun guy to have on fantasy, because some weeks will be really
cool.
He can put up numbers.
I'm planning on cutting him within 2 weeks, but let's go.
Once he gets coronavirus. So, speaking of politics, which the coronavirus shouldn't be political, but it is. Anyway, Trump called our president Donald Trump, just to make that clear, in case anyone didn't know who Trump was, I guess.
Your
his brother, the dead one, or anyway, Trump called the commissioner of the Big Ten, which we all know the Big Ten is not playing football this fall. And Trump called and said, hey, dude, we should play some football this fall. And the Big Ten commissioner's like, hey, man, nice to hear from you. I can't make that decision by myself, right. But let's keep discussing it. So essentially, what happens is the commissioner, along with their board of the Big Ten, have to come to an agreement on when they want to play. So essentially, they're either going to start play like normal, or they're going to do it in November, or they're going to do it in the spring or something like that, whatever they said. And Trump's like, no, let's play. It's obviously that, you know, and I agree, because why is it that some conferences are like, oh God, no, we can't do this. And then some conferences are like, let's play ball. And so people also made kind of a big deal. Like, why is the president of the United States calling a commissioner of a college football conference and saying like, let's play for football and play football. And it's like, I don't care. Like, he can do that. Like, as long as he's doing his other jobs up to the standard that I think he should, I don't care what he does in his free time. Heck, he could have had this conversation at 10:30 at night. He's about ready to, you know, call it a nice long day. And it's like, hey, let's play some football. So I mean,
early on in the pandemic, he got together with Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA. What's his face? The owner, Robert Kraft, was in on the meeting. A couple other certain league officials and commissioners and everything, and have a meeting about the idea of trying to get sports back and the importance that would subsequently have on our country in the state of chaos that we were plunged into and everything. So it's not the first time that he's had a meeting or a phone call or discussion of sorts with somebody higher up in the sports realm. Yeah, but also, how much do you think the Big Ten and the Pac-12 regret kind of jumping the gun and making a decision that didn't need to be made? There was no reason for a time crunch and for an answer right then. And then they came out and definitively said, hey, no, we're not going to have it this year.
Well, I think it's the pressure. I think it's the pressure from society and the pressure from people.
They're a little bit more susceptible to it than perhaps that of the SEC and the ACC.
Yeah, I guess. And so they're getting the pressure from the people who destroyed Kirk Cousins yesterday.
It's true. It's the optics of it. It's the media pushback.
It is. And
the public backlash.
And it's kind of, you know, it's been like this for a long time where the court of public opinion, even if they're not the majority, decide what happens in this country.
Well, it's because they're the loudest.
They are the loudest. They very much are the loudest, and they do things in ways that everybody hears about, and there's video of it, and there's people, you know, doing things, and there's celebrities standing on their side, and celebrities have big followings, and Google and Facebook are also step in, and it's like, okay, well, you know, the silent majority also has a little bit of a say, but whatever, that's fine.
Right, but if they were not comfortable playing it now in the first week of September or the second week of September, like, I don't understand why you have to come out and say there's absolutely no chance of a season happening at all. Why not be able to just like string it along? Let's, you know, every couple weeks, let's check in and kind of test the waters and see where we're at, because I think that's a really, again, rational approach to it. But in order to appease
rational decisions anymore. It's just decisions made on a whim based off of what people, you know, essentially force you to do, because if you do it the other way, then you're going to be put on blast and you're going to go down.
You're ostracized.
Oh, for sure. And that's been a problem for a long time. I think they should play. The Sounders just had a game last night. They were playing at Rail Salt Lake, and they have 20% capacity. And so there are fans in the stands. And I mean, I don't know. I just think it's going to get to a point where eventually you have to get back to some normalcy. And some communities are doing that, and I think they're doing a pretty good job with it.
Well, this past weekend, I watched a decent amount of high school football in which the bleachers were filled with the respective student bodies, which was interesting to see. Yeah. Also, the smaller colleges, FCS schools, were playing college football this past week. Also had some fans in attendance. People are doing it. It's a thing.
They're doing it, and we're not seeing the spikes. At least it's not being reported. And I think that's the big part, that if there were spikes, we'd hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd hear about it really fast. Because same thing with, like, let's go back to Sturgis and the motorcycle rally. I just saw the first headline from that. Someone just died after attending Sturgis and he had COVID. And it's like, okay, like, people probably die at Sturgis anyway from drug abuse. I mean, that probably happens anyway. So that's the thing, is if we don't see headlines about it, that's that's the media trying to pretend like, yeah, it's still a thing. We're just not going to cover it. Like, mm-hmm. of course things are still going on. So I think Big Ten should get back to playing. I'm going to give a call to the Big Ten commissioner and probably let him know my thoughts too.
Yeah, would you please?
Yeah, I think he would really appreciate hearing my thoughts and opinions.
I'm sure he's actually wondering to himself where Justin Reed's phone call has been.
He's watching this right now, expecting me to call him probably in about 15 minutes when we get done.
15.
Yeah.
That's
generous. So we'll move on to some NBA talk here. To get away from football. Sorry, Big Ten commissioner. I don't know what his name is. Anyway, he's in my phone as just commissioner. Just B10 commissioner. So Zach Randolph had an awesome tweet here last night.
Former Memphis Grizzly great.
Very great. Z-Bo. Who shares a nickname with Zach Collins, former Zag star. Who also is nicknamed Z-Bo.
I'm not sure I would say share.
Fair enough.
I think Randolph kind of coined it.
Probably. I don't know how this came to be. I'll have to ask him.
One before the other, I think.
Exactly. So
Birth had something to do with that.
Could definitely possibly be. So we had a tweet from him last night at about 6. It says 9:12. I think that's Eastern time. So about 6 o'clock Pacific time last night. You can see it there. He says in all capital letters, "I married a hoe."
Man of the people.
That
giving
is,
us the content we need.
He is here. I mean, you look at that. Those are all capital letters. He has. I mean, he is really going for it. He's leaving no doubt as to what he feels. That's a bold strategy.
But supposedly he was hacked, right?
He said he was hacked. He came out about an hour later and he said, "I was hacked."
You can't regret sending an emotional tweet without, after the fact, saying that you were hacked.
Yeah.
You can't have one without the other.
Because I've never had any of my social media accounts ever hacked, and I don't know anyone who actually has. I've seen people like send me Ray-Ban sunglasses ads on Facebook Messenger. It's like, how do people get into your social media? Is your password like password or like 1234? Like, how are people getting into these accounts? So I would feel like, especially if I'm Zach Randolph and I have, you know, a decent amount of stuff I want to probably keep private, my password is going to be the strongest, most strangest thing I could ever come up with, because I would not want people messing around on my social media and tens of thousands of people who listen to what I say.
The conspiracy that I'm buying into is the jabroni that's sleeping with Randolph's wife is the one who hacked his account and then tweeted that.
Why are we assuming that she's sleeping with a man?
True. Fair.
Huh.
2020.
Could be – I know who it is. It's Earl Thomas and his brother who she's sleeping with.
Nice.
That's
so
who it was.
Who got the control of the Twitter hacking? Was it Earl or his brother?
I'm going to say his brother because
was
Earl –
was his name Seth?
I think
Seth
so.
Thomas?
Seth Thomas, yeah. I think Earl was not the one hacking it. I think Earl would have performed in the bedroom and then went to practice football.
He does have a lot of time on his free hands. Why is he practicing football? Is anybody going to pick him up?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I haven't yet.
People are like, I think the Seahawks are going to pick him up. It's like, no.
Stop.
Not a chance. Stop. Not a chance. We do not know for sure if, in fact, Zach Randolph's wife is a hoe. We're going to say no at this
one
point.
One of the biggest mysteries of the summer.
Is Fawn Drake a hoe? I'm going to say no because I don't know her background or anything. So I'm going to say no.
Among all the tweets that are on your timeline that just actually have to do with sports and highlights and all these different things and transactions going on within the world of sports, and then Zach Randolph just giving us that dime.
Zach Randolph's wife a hoe is kind of like the headline right now. But one thing that was not discussed at all with Zach Randolph, allegedly a couple years ago, his side chick got pregnant with his kid. So maybe he should have said, "My wife thinks I'm a hoe." Maybe is what he meant to say.
Wow.
I'm just going like second level here.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's this massive underground conspiracy happening with Zach Randolph, his wife, and his side chick with a son. I don't know if she birthed a son.
I don't think anybody could have anticipated this amount of Zach Randolph coverage.
No, not at all. But I love it. I'm a big Z-Bo fan.
Don't know what he's doing outside of
tweeting and being hacked.
But
well, he hasn't tweeted since May before this, so people are like, "Have you been hacked since May? Like, where have you been, Z-Bo?"
Little suspicious.
I think he's probably been with his side chick, is what it sounds like.
Okay, well,
most likely.
So stay tuned because you know that we're going to follow up and investigate this story.
This will be a locker room exclusive in terms of what we find out for you in Zach Randolph and his wife and his side chick.
That's right.
So actual NBA stuff that's going on with the NBA playoffs happening. with a lot of these, speaking of women and the NBA, a lot of guys have, there's been, I think, a few porn stars and a few Instagram models who have come out talking about their relationships with current NBA players. But that's a discussion for another time. Look it up. It's actually pretty interesting. I think Barstool had them on their podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. There was the meme that was looking at the girl and her makeup was so bad. It's like, she better be a player or like a person on 2K just because she looks so fake, like her eyelashes and everything. Yeah, rough look for that girl.
Created player.
Exactly. Before we actually get to the on-court stuff and what's happening in the playoffs, so the Nets, the home of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant,
yes,
have found a new coach.
Oh, that's right. This also broke this morning.
I woke up to this, and I did about three takes, and I was like, you know what? I should just go back to bed because what the hell is happening?
Or I need to wake up from this Inception dream.
Right, exactly. So somebody that was not on anybody's radar, or
for
at least as it was made out to the public, Steve Nash, former point guard of the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns, NBA Hall of Famer, or basketball, rather, Hall of Famer, just in general, great soccer player. Shout out Canada.
He sucks, by the way. On on the he was on Bleacher Report's like halftime show. Oh my god, he was terrible.
I have a hard time believing that.
But I was shocked. He was just not a good analyst for soccer. I'm not sure why.
Oh, analyst. Oh, I thought you meant as a player.
No, okay. Yeah,
I was I've seen him juggle a ball.
He was analyzing the soccer game, and he just wasn't very good. But he's going to be a good head coach, I think.
You think so? I didn't even know that he was in the coaching ranks. So apparently he was actually in player development at Golden State in the time that KD was there. So this was a move that not only KD, but apparently Kyrie Irving both signed off on.
Which is big. I feel like that should be, in this day and age, the most important thing is keeping your stars happy with their head coach.
Would you want that as your first? It's hard for me seeing this Brooklyn Nets thing going down in anything but flames, and I just don't want Steve Nash
to be at the center of it.
Yeah, I don't know, but props to him for, I just don't want to deal with Kyrie Irving. I don't want any part in that.
I don't think anybody
in any
does.
Capacity.
I'm surprised that Steve Nash was like, yeah, this sounds like a fun job.
And then you got to deal with DeAndre Jordan and his stupid contract. Like, are you kidding me?
Well, what were some of the things that were said after this hire? You said you watched Stephen A. this morning on
That was something that I just wanted to touch on a little bit because Stephen A. On First Take.
Our favorite guy here on the Locker Room.
I actually don't mind him most of the
time
because he's
Skip,
the sensible one on the show, which is not
Shannon.
Saying anything. Yeah. But anyway... so he was praising Steve Nash, which he should have been, and everything that Steve Nash has brought to the game and been for the game, and the person that Steve Nash is as a human being, beyond basketball and beyond sports. But anyway, he goes on to say, and I guess this shouldn't be surprising, just where the social and cultural climate is currently, but
specifically
he ended up citing this hire as a product of white privilege. And then shortly after, I don't know if this was exactly in direct response, but our boy, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Did he drop a Woj bomb on it?
Dropped a Woj bomb. Saying, there's a modern history of retired guards getting head coaching jobs without stints as assistant coaches, just like Steve Nash. So he goes on to note Doc Rivers with the Orlando Magic.
Black.
Isaiah Thomas.
Black.
With the Pacers. Also black. Mark Jackson.
Black.
With the Warriors. Black. And then Steve Kerr and Jason Kidd. Not exactly black. However, three out of the five there.
Kerr's definitely a longtime homie.
Right.
He played on that
those Bulls teams.
That Bulls team that was definitely, I mean, with Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman, I mean.
Cultural icons.
He was definitely just slotted right in there. I mean, you talk about that Bulls team, and you're like, you got Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen.
Dennis Rodman,
and Steve Kerr.
Steve Kerr, our guy.
Steve Kerr.
But anyway, so just to push back on, and I'm not saying that Stephen A.'s point is completely invalidated, but I would just like to push back a little bit on the fact that this has happened in the past with coaches that were not white and that have been able to just jump the hurdles of getting in on the ground floor of the coaching.
Well, it makes sense
ranks.
For point guards to become head coaches. If you're going to pick a position on the court to be a future head coach, it's point guard night and day. Like, that is the decision.
How backup quarterbacks end up becoming head coaches.
Yeah, exactly. And you're 100% right. I mean, it happens all the time. A lot of backups, just in general, too, in the NFL become head coaches, or not even head coaches, but coaches. So you said, though, that you saw that Kyrie and Kevin push for that, or was that...
So it sounds like, and I think there's still a lot of information that's yet to be divulged to the public about it yet, but it sounds like it was Kevin Durant really pulling for this because of his time at Golden State when, which I didn't even know about this, when Steve Nash was in player development.
So my thought on this then is you're looking at a guy like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who are both, and specifically Kyrie Irving, who was very much at the forefront of the discussions happening among the Black Lives Matter movement in the NBA. If Stephen A. is going to come out and say this is just another example of white privilege, then what questions are you asking Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? Because I know for a fact that before they made this hire, they came over to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving or called them or whatever and said, hey, or if they reach out to them, either way, they're the final ones to sign off on
that. Right, they're the ones that got Kenny Atkinson fired in the first place.
Exactly. And then you have Stephen A. coming out and saying this is an example of white privilege, yet you have star black NBA players who are standing up and saying this is the guy that we want.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this double standard, and I think it's both a double standard and also an unclear message as far as what what the NBA and what its athletes and what sort of forward-thinking analysts like Stephen A. I don't think there's a clear message as far as what they want to have done here, because if you do want to say that this is an example of white privilege, then that means that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are the poster child for standing up to white privilege. I mean, or for continuing it.
Endorsing it.
And so that's why I think it's a lame argument. I think it's Stephen A. trying again to grab headlines. Steve Nash.
Well, you got to think about the headspace that he's been in, being on shows over the past week and, you know, the past months, mm-hmm. ever since the murder of George Floyd and everything. So I'm not surprised that he came out and said that. But I just wanted to push back a little bit on it, not to be the two white guys sitting here saying, hey, like white privilege, like pump the brakes, like, yeah, maybe a thing. But in this case, I certainly don't think so.
I don't see it at all. And I think it takes away the validity of it somewhere else. I think if you really are going to stand on that podium and fight for that, that's awesome. But do it on the right circumstances, because I don't think this is it. And I think this also clouds the message, because then you're gonna have people who may actually need to be like white privilege, you know, or to hear that right message.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're gonna turn away, and they're not gonna listen to you when you actually do make a good point, because this is a bad point, and I think this is a bad example of it. And I think it clouds the message of what the NBA wants to do.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah,
they're
just gonna be bad examples, and there are going to be bad moments such as this on both sides, just because it's such a charged. Emotionally topic of discussion, and it's so nuanced and it's so gray, and it's always difficult without having a lengthy dialogue in which you are able to explore every nook and cranny
and that is the hard part too, is because you'll never reach the bottom, you'll never touch all sides.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never be able to do it in a way that doesn't either A, offend somebody on either side, or B, get the right message across, because it's gonna sound bad probably either way.
It's inevitable.
Exactly. So, no, I think it's interesting. We'll see what. And best of luck to Steve Nash. I think he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's obviously very intelligent. He knows what he's doing in terms of play calling and running the floor. But that doesn't mean he's really great at leading a team full of people that aren't his teammates.
Right.
You know, now he is the guy running a bunch of guys who aren't much younger than him in the grand scheme of it.
Also, Derek Fisher was another example of a guy who went straight from being a player to a head coach. So,
yeah, I didn't think about Fisher.
That's out there. But anyway, so that was a big bomb in the NBA world that will not really matter until the next season starts, because, hey, Brooklyn is at home.
But they are going to be, I think, pretty good next year.
Unfortunately, I know. This is the Celtics window, unfortunately.
Yeah,
okay,
really.
But
speaking of the Celtics.
So, yeah, I'm actually not going to start there. I won't wave my flag yet. But
it'll come now.
So, playoffs. It's happening. What's up? We are officially in both the Western and Eastern Conference into the conference semifinals now. We've narrowed it down to 8 teams across the league. But, okay, so last night, Game 7, which everybody was excited for, because this on paper was the most interesting matchup of the first round between Houston and OKC.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting because every game that Houston won, they absolutely slaughtered OKC. And then every game that OKC won, it was a very close, heated contest down to the wire. They were just kind of made for the way that their team is built. made for those games with their veteran presence, also being the best free throw shooting team in the NBA and just making good decisions late in games. That didn't exactly happen last night as they fell by 2 points to the Houston Rockets. Boy, James Harden is thanking everybody on his team that they won that game because Lu Dort, our guy who really showed up, especially for the casual fans that didn't know about Lu Dort, he became the Harden stopper. And there was one game, I think it might have been game five, where Harden had his way with him. But beyond that, the rest of the series, he was doing a really good job on Harden. And that was the case last night. Harden went 4 of 15, including 1 of 9 from 3,
ouch,
and 17 points in a game seven that was not a runaway win for the Rockets. Mm. They needed him. And fortunately, other guys like Eric Gordon and Russell Westbrook actually didn't completely shit the bed yesterday. Yeah. So that helped. But because that would have Harden already has this reputation that lingers around him. In my opinion, justifiably so. He has shrunk and disappeared in big moments over and over and over in his career, even dating back to the 2012 finals when he was still with OKC.
Yeah.
Just a shell of himself in these big moments, and that was the case yesterday. The biggest play that he made, which we'll get to later, but he dodged a ball. So
I liked all the dodgeball references last night. That was also
Yeah, he was
funny.
Getting caught up on his Ben Stiller
yeah.
movies. But so Houston moves on. Really, OKC, a lot of people before the season didn't even expect them to be able to make the playoffs anyway.
No.
And they were, I think they were a 46-win team. They made the most out of a roster in which they traded, before the season, Russell Westbrook, their franchise player.
He's been with them since the first day of being OKC.
Right.
He was drafted by the Sonics.
He was
a Sonic at the very beginning,
right,
but he never played as a Sonic. And so and even more than Durant, he has been OKC, and that's it.
Yep.
And so that was a big deal.
Traded away Paul George, but they got a litany of first-round picks that will keep them company throughout.
Thank you.
the 2020.
Super happy about that.
Right. And so they got Chris Paul back, and a lot of people didn't even think that Chris Paul was going to end the season on OKC. Everyone thought that he was going to be traded to a contender. And they made the best of just really an adult team. Billy Donovan did a great job, especially defensively, in trying to figure out the rotations with those guys. And they found a really lethal rotation with the three guards, was always their best go-to down the stretch. So hats off to OKC for a solid season and for giving Houston, who really should have won this series pretty easily, pretty handily, a real run for their money. And now Houston's going to be what I would assume is exhausted going into their next matchup against the Lakers, who have almost had a week of rest now.
Yeah, the Lakers are definitely going to probably bend them over.
I think so. It's an interesting matchup on paper, though, because the Lakers are one of the bigger teams, and they play a lot of big men, McGee, Dwight Howard, obviously Anthony Davis.
And even LeBron.
True.
As the tallest point guard.
True, but if they're trying to go small, matching up with Houston, that means KCP's got to get a lot more minutes. I mean, Danny Green's always going to be out there just because he's a decent defender, even though he can't hit the broadside of a barn anymore. and we'll see if Rondo's able to come back, but it is a stark opposition in styles going into that round. But you just got to imagine, especially with Houston being obviously all about the three-pointer, coming off of the seven-game series, really tired legs. We'll see what those three-pointers are looking like.
And they play pretty soon, right?
They play on Friday.
It's Friday?
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah.
Best of luck.
So, yeah, not a lot more to talk about there, but
We'll talk more about that Game 7 play later.
Right. So the other Game 7, which was one of the grossest played games, though it was tightly contested, it was a two-point game. It was competitive. However, the level of play was just awful.
Which is also a very different game than the other six games.
Right. That was between Utah and Denver, of course, and the whole series had just been a shootout between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, and both of them had pretty tough nights.
They forgot how to play.
I would assume they were a bit tired. But, yeah, nobody else on either team could hit anything to save their lives anyway. Denver scored 30 points in the second half, 15 in the third, 15 in the fourth. Gross. And who could have been another jabroni of the week was Torrey Craig, because at the end of that game, when Denver's already up 2 points, they get a fast break, and all they have to do with like 7 or 8 seconds left, all they have to do is dribble out the clock, maybe get fouled, hit a couple free throws, put the game away. Instead, they take it to the hole, and Torrey Craig misses the layup, Gobert grabs a rebound, outlet pass to Conley, and Conley has, I mean, albeit a tough shot.
But a good look still.
A good look, and it rims out, and it's just like, you
that was almost it was halfway down.
That game away.
Yeah.
That did not need to be like that. Oh, man.
That was what, 80-78? Was that the
80-78.
Final score? 80-78. I didn't look and see what any stats are. I'd like to see the last time a game ended that low scoring in the NBA over the last probably 10 years.
Right, and I think it's going to be a series that's going to be remembered for a long time because Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell, neither of them are going anywhere anytime soon, and I'm sure they're going to have playoff matchups in the future.
And Mitchell just signed a max contract too already, right? Or he was.
I think he's yet to.
I think it was. I think they were talking about it already.
They're talking about it.
Well, and then
they got to figure out what to do with Gobert too, and whether they want Gobert to be the number two, even though he's really nice. Probably like the, I don't know.
He's not a very offensive. He's not a big offensive threat.
Yeah, and Mike Conley is probably going to have to show up in the regular season because he was really bad during the regular season. Had a really hard time getting adjusted to the style of play there in Utah and actually running the pick and roll with Gobert. So there are a lot of things that Utah has to figure out, but another undermanned team, as I mentioned a lot, that didn't have really much of a bench, and obviously it might have been a different series if Bogdanovich was playing because they only lost by one shot is what it came down to.
Yeah.
So easily could have gone the other way in their favor, but looking on to Denver and the Clippers, I don't know if there's a least interesting conference semi matchup. I'm kind of over watching Jokic's red sweaty arms run up and down the court, even though I do love his style of play. But I'm just over Denver. They're gross. Their offense is just so one-dimensional. It's either Jokic or it is Murray and just playing that two-man game. They have no shooting. Gary Harris is back, and that's a defensive plus, but he couldn't hit anything. He's been struggling all year from three anyway. LA's just going to – unless LA does this thing that they did with Dallas where they just don't really show up and just act like they've already got it in the bag and already have it won, then they should win this game in four or five – or this series in four or five games.
Yeah.
Their wing defense is just going to be way too good, especially for Murray. All those pull-up jumpers and fadeaways and yo-yoing that he was able to do successfully against Utah is just not going to be there when you have Paul George and Kawhi and maybe even Marcus Morris on you. The defensive flexibility for the Clippers, obviously one of their stronger points. I really don't think there's a lot to talk about in that series. Clippers in five?
Yeah, probably.
Five?
Yeah, Murray will have one game where he goes off for 50 again or 45 or whatever, and they'll probably win, but... Yeah,
also, Murray didn't even realize that they were playing one day after when
was
he was in the post. In the post game,
he's like,
interview with SVP.
2 days, okay.
He's like, yeah, you guys got to go right back at it on Thursday. And he's like, what? We're not playing on Friday? And it's like, that's probably not a good omen for how this series is going to go for the Denver Nuggets and Jamal Murray. But two T's. So Celtics up 2-0.
There you go.
What's up?
First time in a few weeks since you've worn that.
I know. I only bring it out on special occasions. I feel like this is one of those occasions because I certainly, as a very timid optimist as it revolves around my favorite sports teams, didn't think that the Celtics were going to be up 2-0. I was excited about 1-0 and then 2-0. Whoa. Because I was at the gym. I was watching the game. They were going into the fourth quarter down 8 points, and they were lucky that they were only down 8. Okay. Yeah. And Marcus is chucking up threes, and I'm like, dude, he went 5 for 9 in game one, so you know that's about as good as you're going to get from Marcus.
You're not going to get much better than that.
And then I drive home, and I get a notification, 1 minute left in the fourth quarter, Celtics are up by 3. And then I go through Twitter as I'm pulling into my driveway, and it's like Marcus Smart or Steph Curry, and I'm like, what the hell happened?
Wow.
He hit 5 in a row, including getting fouled on one of the threes and hitting the free throw, so he had 16 straight points. To claw them back, and they ended up getting that game out.
I don't know if
you're Toronto, I got to be worried just because nobody is shooting well, and Siakam, who they want to be the offensive focal point, he can't get around Jalen Brown.
He's struggling.
He's not being able to do any of the things that they want him to do unless you're just taking up these pull-up spot-up threes if you're Van Vliet or Lowry, who are both shooting really badly. I don't know what kind of offense you're generating against the Celtics defense and the perimeter defenders that they have.
Yeah.
And the Celtics also have not played well, especially offensively. They have yet to play well. Kemba decided to turn it on in the fourth quarter finally, but he was like 1 for 12 going into the fourth quarter or something like that. He was shooting atrociously. And so I feel like Boston hasn't even played their best game yet. And you got to think, I mean, Nick Nurse, obviously one of the best coaches in the NBA, he's going to make the adjustments or whatever adjustments he can make.
He'll have to,
already 2 games into the series. But Toronto's not going to go away. I don't think the Celtics are going to sweep them as much as that would, you know, put my anxiety to bed. That would be nice. But it's been a surprising first couple of games, in my opinion. I thought it was going to be a close series, and the second game was close, and I think it will continue to be a close series. But, man, Toronto, I would be scared.
Sweating a bit.
I would be nervous. I think the biggest difference is Jason Tatum just being the best player in the series. In the playoffs, you need that bona fide superstar to carry you through sometimes, especially perhaps if the other pieces of your team aren't exactly clicking. And he was that. He had 34 in game two. Ooh. And he just can get anywhere he wants. And he adjusted by going to the rim, driving, getting contact so that he could see the ball go through. He was 14 of 14 from the free throw line. Mm-hmm. So he was awesome in that sense, just really taking it to them and, you know, taking it upon himself to get the offense going. So I think that he's ultimately going to be the difference maker in this series. I don't think Toronto's dead, but I think Boston should feel pretty good about the position that they're in, knowing that they can play better.
Yeah.
And then we move on to the final one. So the Heat are also up 2-0 on the Bucks. Did you watch any of this game last night?
No, I didn't.
Do you know anything about what happened?
I do, yeah. What, they had seven players score in double figures, the Heat?
Yeah, and then Hero coming off the bench with 17. All their starters were in double figures. Nobody scored in their starting rotation less than 13 points.
And Kelly Olynyk, you know, the star of that team, had also had double figures.
Obviously.
The Canadian Stallion.
That's right. But the Bucks went down big early, and they clawed their way back into the game. And really, Miami should have been able to put it away. They double-team Jimmy Butler on an inbound, and he throws it, and it hits the backboard right into, I think it was Bam Adebayo's hands. check me on that. Giannis's hands, or Brooke Lopez. One of the bigs. Anyways, puts it up, makes it a three-point game. They get a defensive stop. They come back down the floor. And this is another thing I'm going to talk about a little bit later, but Chris Middleton chucks up the three, gets fouled. Foul called on Goran Dragic. Wasn't a foul. Anyway, was not a foul. Anyway, they called it. He hits all of the free throws, so it's tied. I think it was 113-113 or 114-114.
Yeah.
Either way. So as time expires, on the other end of the floor, Miami brings the ball up. Of course, it's going to be in Jimmy Butler's hands, as it should be.
Yeah.
He takes the shot. And he has two defenders around him. Giannis sets his arm on Jimmy Butler as Jimmy's falling from his jump. Maybe, in my opinion, I thought he was just like, hey, don't fall too hard.
Yeah.
He was just trying to brace his fall, and they call a foul. And so, with no time left on the clock, Jimmy Butler has two free throws, only has to hit one of them, and he sinks both of them. And now the Milwaukee Bucks are down 2-0. The biggest takeaway, especially the way that the game ended in those last couple of possessions and how they were dictated by fouls, was the refs. But either way, Milwaukee, what are you doing? They have not played since they've been in the bubble. They have not been able to make any sort of adjustment. Obviously, they're missing Bledsoe, so they're missing a little bit of defensive presence there. But they're also playing Pat Connaughton a lot of minutes when you have Wesley Matthews, who's a dog as a defender, and obviously you need someone on Jimmy Butler because he's been having his way, especially in game one. I don't know what you're doing.
It's very interesting. And Giannis hasn't even looked all that great either, the whole bubble. He's looked good, I mean, because he's still a good player. But someone yesterday, I don't remember who said it, but they tweeted saying that they think that Giannis is more of a Scottie Pippen, not an MJ, and that he's still looking for his MJ.
But who is going to be your MJ when you're Giannis, when you're...
I don't know.
What we assume to be a back-to-back MVP and now a defensive player of the year.
You have a nickname like that, you can't be a second fiddle to somebody, I don't think.
Right, but man, just the way that the team is constructed and everything, which in the regular season is brilliant, and it's just like, hey, why don't you spread the floor, Giannis is going to take it, and then just surround him with shooters, and that's your offense right there, and it's worked in two consecutive seasons. It's been incredible. Now you got to kind of have to start looking at Mike Budenholzer, because he had especially one really great regular season Atlanta Hawks team that absolutely got eviscerated by Cleveland. I think they got swept.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm not sure that he's built for the playoffs, and he just has these regular season juggernauts that don't actually, I don't know, have any playoff chops.
Yeah.
And it's starting to look that way again. And I don't know, as the number one seed in with having Giannis, I feel like you shouldn't have to be punched in the mouth each one of these series. I mean, because
to figure out, like, oh, we want to win this.
Right. And I don't know. Miami was always a sneaky sleeper team just because of their flexibility on defense. And, I mean, they have two guys in Robinson and Hero that can both go off easily for 15, 20 in a game. They just have really good shooting. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in guys. Obviously, Bam is an amazing defensive player. And then you bring in guys like with the buyout with Andre Iguodala is another defensive athletic body to put on guys. And Jimmy Butler has always been one of the most tenacious defensive players in the league. And it's just like they – I think they're just a mentally tougher team too.
Could be.
And they could be –
less pressure too.
They're better coached at this point. I mean, Spoelstra is – he never gets the credit.
You don't hear about him at all anymore.
No, you don't. But he's one of the best player developing coaches in the league. But so, yeah, both of the two favorites in the East are down 2-0. And I'm obviously all for a Celtics and Heat Eastern Conference Finals. I think it's infinitely more interesting than it would have been with Toronto and Milwaukee, because outside of Giannis, you don't really have a ton of stars anyway. But if you have a Jason Tatum and a Jimmy Butler going up – and the Heat have personality, too, with their young guys in Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro.
I think some of that comes, too, with Spoelstra. I think Spoelstra has a little bit of attitude about him, too.
Right. So that's the NBA right now. Things are starting to heat up. I do kind of miss the NCAA tournament feel, where it's like you wake up and at 10:30 you have games all the way until like 9 o'clock at night. That's done, but we will still every other day
have some good
ball. Each day have two games. And, yeah, I'm excited, especially to see the way those two Eastern Conference series end up shaping out.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be fun. Definitely something to keep an eye on, because the NBA has been doing a great job the entire time throughout this bubble process.
And the level of play has been good. The actual basketball on the court has been really, really good. There has been no drop off there at all.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have if I had to put money on that, I probably would have gone the other way instead. I don't think it would have been as good. But no, it's been up to par. If anything, it's been a little bit more, you know, without having, as our buddy NHL Sports or NBC Sports for NHL would say, you know, there's no women down there to distract them. So,
but now there are the families
are allowed. I think they're allowed like what, five family members or
something like that.
But. All right, so we have some awesome news. The second batch of awesome news for the show. Jabroni was officially added to the dictionary.
I can't help but think that we had a large part in making that.
There's no doubt in my mind that the last 12 shows that we've done, which I guess we haven't had Jabroni the entire time. We've only had it for like the last 3 or 4 weeks, but it's still great. It's still really, really funny. We put that over, you know, over the top. You know, it was here, but it needed to be here, and we put Jabroni there. But Jabroni's been a thing for longer than I realized, and it also has its roots in the WWE, which means that it's even more apparent for a sports show. First off, the big one that a lot of people know is The Rock. Rock made it big. But actually, it came from the Iron Sheik initially in WWE. He used Jabroni. I guess it comes from an Italian word anyway, from an Italian background. So that's also kind of interesting. It came from Upper Italian dialect, giambone, meaning ham. It's squared circle parlance, though, and that's when The Rock ended up becoming a bigger deal than the Iron Sheik. But it was added to dictionary.com. Jabroni, slang, a stupid, foolish, or contemptible person, a loser. She always has a comeback to own the trolls and jabronis on Twitter. Or, shut your mouth, you dumb jabroni, is also another way to use it. So that's pretty fun. I think The Rock is a fun character. WWE is, for as fake as it is still very entertaining TV. They've been able to continue to be entertaining over the decades somehow. I don't know how.
I could not disagree less, but I know that there is a large portion of the population that thinks the way that you do.
And, well, no. I think it's very fake. I can't watch it, but I think the characters of WWE are really interesting is what I mean.
Fair enough.
Like the Hulk and The Rock and
Triple H
and Undertaker. Like, those are interesting characters. Do I watch WWE? Not anymore. Once I found out it was fake, I was like, I'm out of here.
How long did it take you to find out it was fake?
I was probably 10, 11, somewhere in there. So, like, probably right before middle school. I'd say, like, 6th to 7th grade.
Okay.
Which is probably fair. So, with that in mind, the Jabroni segment was here to stay forever, now that it's an actual word. And do you want to do yours first?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we'll let you go ahead.
So now, especially knowing what the actual definition of jabroni is, I feel a little bit bad about this guy, just with everything that was on the line last night for Lou Dort and
nice, man.
And the Oklahoma City
now
Thunder.
Now you're a real D-bag.
Yeah, I know. And it's even tougher, too, because he played actually a great game. He had 30 freaking points. Lou Dort, offensive explosion, and I think it was 6 of 12 from three. But this was in crunch time, the last few seconds of the game.
Houston got
so they
got
to get a shot off, and nobody's being able to do that. And so he gets a shot blocked by James Harden.
Dort
gets
got
the rebound.
Back.
He could have called a timeout. He could have faced the basket because Harden was not between Dort and the basket. Instead, he tries to get an extra possession and reset everything by trying to throw the ball off of Harden out of bounds. And Harden makes the best play that he had made in the game. In dodging that pass. Boom, catch it. What's your first instinct? Throw it out of bounds. And boom, there's Oklahoma City's playoffs coming to an end. Yep. They did end up getting another possession after this in which they weren't even able to inbound the ball. They threw it to Steven Adams and just nobody touched the ball. So
Steven Adams is a great perimeter shooter, so I see that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was the logical
So you're calling poor rookie Lou Dort.
I am. I'm sorry, just because of the implications that it had in that being the last possession, and obviously emotions and adrenaline are running high, especially in that moment. You know the clock is ticking down and everything, and you have a myriad of thoughts going through your head. And unfortunately, the one that prevailed was, hey, let me try to throw the ball out of bounds off of James Harden, who seemed like he saw it coming from a mile away. So a hats off to James Harden for doing something athletic and something that actually contributed to your team winning in a game seven for the first time in your life. Good job. Good luck going forward. But Lou Dort is unfortunately my jabroni of the week. And now I feel bad because I don't feel like he's a loser because he had 30 points.
Well, you should have known. This was it was in the dictionary 2 days ago.
I really should have known. But wow. Yeah, jabroni. Sorry, Lou. It's going to be you this week.
It's all you, Lou. All right. So I have some audio for you. This was on a podcast that also was on Monday. It's a Pro Football Focus sponsored podcast ran by Kevin Cole, and he had Oscar Ruiz. On the show, Stephen Ruiz on the show, who works for USA Today. And this was what Kevin Cole said in regards to Russell Wilson.
How much of Wilson's ascension do you think to this spot where people see him as being like a 1B to Mahomes? How much of that do you think is the fact that we've had this falling off of other elite options and there's just no one else there really to compete versus he is really at that level? Because I guess I kind of see.
Part of that. That's the second part of the audio. Let's play the first part. That essentially was just talking about Russell Wilson. But essentially what he was saying there is that he thinks that Russell Wilson doesn't deserve to be on this top pedestal of quarterbacks, mainly because other quarterbacks have dropped off from that top tier. So this is what he started it off with in regards to Russell Wilson.
Let's talk about some of these rankings. And a couple of things that I want to talk about. I have some ideas. They may be a little too far. Some takes that may be a little too far out there. One of them that I've been working on, I've been workshopping, is that Russell Wilson, at this point in time, could be a little overrated right now. Could be a little overrated right now. And the reason so
we've talked actually on this show at least once about the fact that Russell Wilson might actually be underrated in terms of the fact he's never garnered an MVP vote. He's never recognized as kind of the Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Brady, Breeze, Rodgers. Now I think people see him that as that good, but they just never talk about it. Colin Coward for years has said that Russell Wilson is horrendously underrated. And so this guy named Kevin Cole, big jabroni, he's a data scientist for Pro Football Focus.
Nerd.
Typical dweeb who just doesn't – I don't know if he doesn't get it or what, because – the fact that his argument, and then I'll tell you what Stephen Ruiz of USA Today, what his argument was. Essentially what Kevin Cole is saying here is that Russell Wilson does not – sure, the only reason he's at number two behind Patrick Mahomes, only reason he's at number two is because guys like Breeze, Brady, Rodgers have gone from that two spot and are now at like four, five, six, somewhere in there. So that automatically moves Russell Wilson into an upper tier. Not because Russell Wilson is all that good – but because other quarterbacks aren't as good as they used to be. Two thoughts on that. First off, that's a pathetic attempt at a rationale to describe Russell Wilson as underrated. And second off, the reason for that is because the natural progression of ranking players based off of their skill naturally, when players get worse, they get bumped down. Players that are better than them move up.
He just explained sports.
He just explained sports to a T, and yet he's trying to spin it as Russell Wilson is currently overrated. I think that's ridiculous. Ruiz comes in right after that first quote that you heard from Cole, and he says Russell Wilson is protected by an offense that is seen as ran poorly with poor play calling. And the reason that Russell Wilson is seen as better is because he makes this awful play calling and weak play calling look really good. And I think that's also a terrible argument, because if anything, that's why he's so good, because he's for the last couple of years has thrown the most touchdowns in the NFL. He's won more games than any team in the NFL in his first like 8 years in the league. And yet you're saying he's overrated because he's taking a bad offense and making it good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm missing something or if these guys are just the biggest jabronis on the block.
I don't know. I really don't have much more to add other than I don't think we'll ever, as Seahawks fans, be in a position which we'll be able to see Russell cook, so to speak. I don't think we're ever going to see him in an offense that we could compare him to other quarterbacks that are able to carry these really well-run offenses, like a Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson now. We're just going to have to struggle as long as Pete Carroll's the head coach, just because of the emphasis on the run. That's never going to go away, unfortunately.
No.
As optimistic as we might get in the offseason, and as much as you know the fans get this momentum going for this Let Russ Cook campaign, we're never going to see it. So probably I'm not sure that we're ever going to be able to counteract this ludicrous argument that this gentleman has made.
If there was a jabroni street, these two guys are living on it, for sure. Because those were – when I heard that, and I heard that this last night, actually I saw it was a Seahawks fan page that said, look what this guy said, and it took me like 30 minutes just to find the podcast because it's just so low on the totem pole in terms of sports podcasts, I guess. When I heard it, I'm like, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
They probably don't even have an apartment. They probably just have a tent pitched on a sidewalk on Jabroni Street.
I bet they don't have a sponsor like we do.
Probably not.
So we have a sponsored Lucky Bird is
that's
our
right.
sponsor. Best digital marketing team in the area.
LuckyBirdsBrands.com.
That was for free. We didn't even have to do that. And we just really like Lucky Bird that much.
Yeah, we really do.
So that was my Jabroni or Jabroni. Jabronis, plural, actually, which is now in the dictionary. We got some closing time now. What do you got for us?
Okay, so I kind of mentioned it earlier, and it's the refs, and particularly the refs of the NBA and the Heat and Bucks game last night. Okay, so unfortunately, even though it was a really good game, all the talk, like I mentioned earlier, was about the referees after the game because they had their hand in the most pivotal possessions of the game. And I got a stat here, so in game two last night between the Heat and the Bucks, there were 11 fouls called on jump shots. 11 fouls called on jump shots. Whew. That is the most in a playoff game in over 7 years. Okay?
That's not a good start.
No, it's not a good start. And when did these happen? They happened in a possession in which Milwaukee was trying to tie the game. And we don't have the video of it for you, but I mentioned a couple weeks ago how I keep getting so frustrated the way that the game is called and that the defenders still jump to contest these jump shots. And it's like you're playing right into the hands of the offense and into the refs to give you or to give themselves an excuse to call a foul. Goran Dragic on this attempted three from Middleton did not even leave his feet. He was the definition of vertical. He was straight up. He did not lean any way or any direction, and he didn't even leave his feet. If anything, you could have called it offensive on Middleton. And they called it a foul, and it made the game more interesting because it gave us buzzer-beating possession. However, it just shouldn't have come down to that. And then the Jimmy Butler one, it's a little bit more defensible just because Giannis puts a hand on him, but it's not gaining an advantage. It's not impeding the shot maker at all. Yeah. So I don't know by the letter of the actual rule if it was – and you just don't – the last shot of the game, you don't want a foul called anyway. And then as ticky-tacky as it was, then it just, it was awful. And I've been so frustrated throughout these playoffs, just the way that the game is called, because a defender's bead of sweat hits the forearm of a guy going up for a layup.
It's a foul nine times out of ten.
It's a foul. It's like just because people make contact does not actually mean that a foul should be called. But that's kind of what it is. And then every player is just so mad every time that they think they get fouled that it's almost like the refs are just so used to seeing people like throw their hands up and flare and everything. And it's just like there have been so many reviews after a foul has been called in which the announcers are saying they're just going like, what the? And it's not just Jeff Van Gundy, who always says that the refs are terrible. Even, you know, people like Doris Burke, who is a living legend in so many people's eyes, are just like, how are you calling these things, man? And it's just like, it was such a good game. And unfortunately, the conversation after the fact was not really much about the game, but it was about the officials. Yeah. And even though it's pretty sick, in my opinion, that the Heat are up 2-0, I wish that it wasn't because Jimmy Butler had two free throws to put the game away with no time remaining after the fact. So I just want the refs to be able to tighten things up. It's the playoffs. I mean, typically outside of the bubble in all the years prior, when the playoffs have really started to heat up, especially in the later rounds, the refs are usually pretty good about letting a little bit more physicality actually play out. And that has just not been the case so far. And I don't want this to be a talking point throughout the rest of the playoffs. I don't want the playoffs to be marred by the officiating. So I just... Scott Foster, and actually it wasn't even Scott Foster's crew, which is actually pretty amazing. but the Heat and the Bucks officiating crew from last night needs to be put on notice, and let's not have this going forward, please.
So they're close to being on jabroni status.
They really are.
So actually, they're lucky. Yeah. They're lucky they made closing time.
Yeah, right, you're lucky. Lou Dort actually had the worst play of his young career, but big Lou Dort fans anyway. Anyway, so. That's my closing time. Refs,
yeah,
figure it out.
Refs, figure it out.
What you got?
If not, you'll find your place on our second-to-last segment.
And you don't want to be there.
You don't want to be there. That's bad. Jabroni Street's a bad place to be.
Tense.
It's a bad neighborhood.
A lot of tents.
So my closing time is kind of nice and fun, and it has to do with local legend DeMontis Sabonis, who got engaged at some point but before today. I'm not sure when it didn't say. But the Pacers were nice enough to put a nice post here for DeMontis Sabonis and his new fiance. My favorite part about this entire thing is she looks like a child. She looks like somebody who has just graduated high school because he is an abnormally large person. He's on one knee. And at full height, she's probably the same height as him when he's on one knee. And but it's nice to see, you know, look, a nice beach. Looks like his foot's healing nicely. So that's always a good plus.
Those pants are doing wonders for Sabonis.
Yeah, those pants are doing great things for him. So congratulations to Sabonis and his new fiance. I wish I knew what her name was. Shoshana?
Shoshana?
Is that true?
All right, Vinny coming in with the Vinny just knows all about the fiancés.
Oh, it's on what? Where is it at? Oh, it is right on the tweet. Wow.
Reading really helps.
Shoshana. Hi, huh, I wonder if she's Lithuanian too.
Maybe.
That seems like a Lithuanian name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a Lithuanian. Actually, technically, he was born in Portland, but he is of Lithuanian descent.
Mm-hmm.
Domas. So, congrats to them. That's cool news. Nice to see that Sabonis looks like he's healthy. He's not. I mean, he's on the beach, so maybe he's getting a workout in too, doing some running there on the dunes. But
you know what's really exciting is that the next time we come back and do this pod, there will be NFL football that night.
That night, we are on NFL watch. At this point, we are approximately 7 days and 5 hours from kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
That's thrilling news.
It really is. And so expect from us our big NFL preview 2020 season pod next week. We'll get the NBA in there a little bit just because it's going to be further into the playoffs. And that is actually still something that matters. But we're probably not going to have a lot of NASCAR, not a lot of golf, not that we usually do anyway. But it's going to be a big, bad NFL podcast.
We'll have a Seattle Kraken pennant. That is en route from Dick's Sporting Goods. Thanks, Dick's.
Oh, yeah.
That will be right up there as well. Probably not much NHL talk.
Crackheads, baby.
Big.
We're coming for your favorite player, so watch out.
Expansion NHL draft. When is the expansion draft anyway? I would assume it has to be soon, right?
That's a great question, but I don't think they need an answer right now.
They play next season.
Yeah, they do, or 2021.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when that is. We'll figure that out. Nope, that was 3 years ago. That was for the Golden
Knights. Doesn't matter because we're coming back at you next week.
Past So we will get that everything answer you for you about, the, about NFL. The Seattle Kraken because they will be behind us. We'll have our NFL special, which will be a nice long one. So we will see you back here again next week. Thank you for stopping by and letting us talk to you.
And be sure to check out LuckyBirdBrands.com. See you guys. Thanks for watching The Locker Room on Spokane Talks. Check us out on Facebook as well as our other platforms. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by emailing us at info@SpokaneTalksOnline.com. And for more sports news, opinions, and content, follow Justin and me on Twitter.